on the 51-day war, ruin and resistance in Gaza. And at 11 o'clock, Chris Siegel hosts The Food Show with guest Rosanna Pansino, author of The Nerdy Nummies Cookbook, and Jesus Guillen, Oregon's only Latino winemaker. And once again, we thank you, KBOO members, for your generous support. If you're not a current member, now is a great time to become one. Just go to kboo.fm/give to find out about our matching grant. And here we go on to Air Cascadia. Thanks for tuning in today.
Good morning, Cascadia. Today is Wednesday, November 18th, 2015, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio, at 90.7 FM, kboo.fm on the web. Well, today our guest is no less than Colleen Rowley, the most extraordinary whistleblower of them all, in that it was, of course, Rowley who's made 2002 memo to the FBI director exposed some of the FBI's pre-9/11 failures. She was named one of Time Magazine's Persons of the Year in 2002. She wrote to the FBI director again in February of 2003 with some hard questions about the reliability of the evidence being adduced to justify the impending invasion of Iraq. She now warns of terror attacks being used as a pretext for official agendas by which we might clarify official misconduct, or misconduct in the name of saving American lives, protecting Americans. If there's one thing that gets Americans' attention, other than the word jobs, it's safety. That's what people are obsessed with, forgetting that it's not safe to get out of bed in the morning. It's not safe to drive, certainly not safe to drive to work. There isn't any safety anywhere. And particularly in these dark days that we are living in. This, again, to be very clear about the attacks in Paris, these are symptoms of habitat collapse. We talk about climate change and shrug our shoulders and say, well, no point in restraining consumption, no point in reining in population, because after all, it's out of our control. And now we're just going to make a lot of money on fixes for the damage that we've done, forgetting that climate change is just part of the damage that we've done to our habitat. Everything is an environment when you come right down to it. And when you begin to destroy your habitat, then you begin to see the psychosis that permeates every aspect of life on a dying planet. We've got a couple of, before we speak with Colleen, we've just got a couple of headlines to go through. Oregon's population has passed 4 million people. Population growth consists of two factors: natural increase, number of births minus number of deaths, and net migration. From 2014 to 2015, net migration accounted for roughly 80% of Oregon's population growth. We have to think too about carrying capacity, what the land, our habitat, what the environment can take. It can only take so much. And once that point has been exceeded, we find ourselves on the other side of the bell curve, and we are heading downhill fast. Once you hit that point, any species, once they hit that point, will begin to self-destruct. And that said, moving right along, we have recently got a notification here from Jody McCaffrey down in in Coos Bay fighting the fight against the Jordan Cove project and the Pacific Connector pipeline that has been going on down there for a very long time. There are lots of things that you can do right now to participate in stopping this from going through. You can comment on a removal fill permit application, and there are a great many other things. We're going to try and get that on the website today. It doesn't appear today. We'll try and get Jody on the blowout tomorrow or perhaps Friday to let us know what exactly we can do, because now these are critical days, aren't they always? We're in a run-up to big holidays when people are not thinking about Jordan Cove. Oh no, this is a great time for the corporate interests hand-in-hand with government interests to push through some of the most ill-advised legislation and development that we've ever seen. It's a matter of record that this happens every time around. And environmental groups are filing lawsuits seeking information on an Idaho wolf-killing derby. Yep, they had an wolf. This is great. They had a wolf-killing derby in Idaho, and none of the wolves came. Apparently, one of the eager beaver hunters had this quote for us today. I just wish I could have got him on the phone to deliver this himself. He says, "We don't care about lawsuits, but we failed miserably at harvesting a wolf." They don't shoot wolves in Idaho. You see, they harvest them. Like it was, head of lettuce or something. Alder goes on. There's no point getting sponsorships and doing this and that and not being able to get a wolf. Well, there you see, poor chap. It must be frustrating out there in the woods with your gun and your hat and not a wolf to be seen. Steve will be sad when all the wolves are gone. That's for sure. So, Governor Kate Brown now says Oregon will in fact welcome refugees from fleeing Syria. Brown was silent on this on Monday, and so one by one the dominoes fell across the country, and bigoted governors expressed their discontent with allowing desperate people to cross their borders. And the Puget Sound region is projected to face more intense flooding, rising sea levels, heavier downpours, and thinner winter snowpack as temperatures continue to warm in coming decades. You see, we're taking it for granted. We don't even expect ourselves to try to limit our consumption. We don't expect ourselves to try to limit population. These things would help. These things would go a lot further than any stopgap measures that are put in place, one, to make the public think that something is being done on their behalf, and two, and perhaps most importantly, this is a great way for corporations to make a lot of money. Disaster capitalism, that's what it's called. The Swinomish and Jamestown Tsleil-Waututh tribes have assessed how climate change will affect their resources, and they're devising strategies to address those changes. I don't understand it. No one is thinking about addressing the cause, but instead we focus on the symptoms. And one of the symptoms, of course, are terrible events like that which took place last Friday in Paris. Just one symptom of environmental collapse. Don't think they're related? Take a little harder look. And a second major oil company has abandoned its plans to drill in the Arctic off the northwest coast of Alaska, Statoil. They're a Norwegian enterprise, and they had leases in the Chukchi Sea. They're pulling out now as well. And Washington, D.C. joined Manila and 10 other cities around the world in protests against the Trans-Pacific Partnership. It's expected to affect all aspects of ordinary life. And again, it's a symptom of the desperation born out of our witnessing our habitat die and refusing to take steps to mitigate that death. In any case, in D.C., crowds shut down traffic on Monday and occupied various offices. And what you may have heard about this is probably not equal to what really happened. This was a huge event all around the world. People are very disturbed when they realize that we're into that final 90 days now on debate on the Trans-Pacific Partnership. And we've been distracted by so many things. And yet this is one thing which is going to have very lasting and very painful effects for all of us. Despite the intelligence community's attempts to blame the NSA whistleblower Edward Snowden for tragic attacks in Paris on Friday, yes, they did, the NSA's mass surveillance programs do not have much of a track record, or either before or after Snowden, of identifying or thwarting actual large-scale terrorist plots. The surveillance we have now is the likes of which the world has never seen before. And it did little or nothing, absolutely nothing, to stop what happened in Paris. CIA Director John Brennan said on Monday that many of the terrorist operations are uncovered and thwarted before they're able to be carried out. He lamented the post-Snowden hand-wringing that has made that job more difficult. That's John Brennan. But the reason that there haven't been any large-scale terror attacks by ISIS in the U.S. is not because they were averted by the intelligence community, but because, and there's exceptions, as there are with any generalizations. The real reason is that none were actually planned. And on that note, I want to bring our guest today, Colleen Rowley, on. Good morning, Colleen, and thank you so much for joining us today.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Thanks for your patience while we rip through a few critical headlines. Pretty much everything points in the same direction. Our planet is dying, things are collapsing, and we end up with a situation like that which we saw on Friday in Paris, where unbelievably, incredibly violent acts of what can only be called desperation and ignorance. And the West itself acts out of desperation and ignorance, because how else do we explain the massive surveillance mechanism that we have? I want to ask you, did surveillance play any role at all in containing any of the terrorist acts, or was it simply not present and accounted for? How do we factor that in?
At this point, there's more than just the Paris attacks. I mean, there's been at least three or four obvious instances where you can show, and some research, I mean, these are even research things that show that the massive surveillance, what actually goes back to total information awareness, which was Poindexter's original idea, and it was carried out even a lot more than just the metadata program. There's the informant gathering. So there are these nets out. Every agency has them. They all have different acronyms, not just the NSA, the FBI, the CIA. They all have these things. But essentially, they are a form of total information awareness. If you go all the way back, and this is, I think, around 2007, when the FBI was asking to increase a program whereby they would have a few billion records of course, mostly non-relevant records inputted. It was Sensenbrenner who asked, well, where's your proof? The same question you just asked me. Where is the proof that this even works? And so then they did commission, the Homeland Security commissioned a study by the Academy of Sciences. And so these are experts looking at it, and they found that there was no way, when you collect all this data, this massive data, almost all of it not relevant. Of course, there could be some needles in the haystack, some relevant things, but by putting more hay in these things, you're actually making the task more difficult. So this was all the way back in 2007 that they found that it didn't work, long even before the Snowden disclosures, and we knew really that it was many, many times even worse than what they thought at the time. The other, of course, is there's been attacks in the United States, the underwear bomber, the Times Square bomber, the shooter at Navy Yard, and as well as the one at Fort Hood. And none of these, even though some of these people were in the system, like I said, they might have been in the data. That doesn't matter. That doesn't matter that they were in the data. Certainly, Nidal Hassan, the major, what had been looked at, and he even sent messages to Yemen, to Awlaki, who later we claimed was one of the top terrorists. So obviously that didn't trigger any kind of action. The problem, Marcy Wheeler has an article trying to explain this to people, but it is only, and actually Snowden has said the same thing as well, collect it all means knowing nothing. because now you might as well say you have the world in your computers. Well, we're back to square one. Okay, there's a distinction between being able to prevent and knowing something before it will happen by this massive data collection or even anything, any other way. Okay, there's a big distinction then between afterwards. So once they do identify, and it's about the same as a fingerprint. So fingerprints don't work to prevent crime. I mean, anybody who would have suggested, if Hoover would have suggested we can prevent crimes from occurring by collecting fingerprints, somehow it'll deter people or something, you know, well, people would have laughed. Well, the massive data collection is very similar to the fingerprint repository. What it does, though, is after an event has occurred, as you now see in Paris, and this has been the case in many of the other terrorist attacks, then they can go back to their database, and then they can see the connections, because now they actually have something to go on, whereas before they didn't. So that's what's going on, and so they don't explain this. The officials are preying on fear of people, so they never explain this distinction between maybe at one point we'll have somebody finally level and tell us, you know, the truth about it. Afterwards, they are then able to roll up other members that might have been connected, and you see that going on in Paris. None of this much matters, though, whether you can't prevent, and, you know, even if you can roll up the people in that thing, if you continue to increase the hatred and the potential for terrorism, the radicalization that's going on. And so this is the thing that they will not level about. They are increasing terrorism. They've been increasing terrorism since 9/11, through the wars, through, of course, all the others terrible things the United States has done with torture and Guantanamo and making essentially the world hate the United States. So by doing that, and even our generals admit that drones...
We have to go, Colleen. I apologize. I'd like to have you back on the show very soon. I want to thank you so much for joining us today. I apologize for having to cut you off, time limitations, as always. This has been a Cascadia for Wednesday, November 18th, 2015. And Tammy Dean engineered the show for us today. Thanks for that, Tammy. Kathleen Stevenson.